You know, I have some friends, believe it or not, I have some friends that I've known for many years. And as time has progressed and we have all gotten a little bit older, I've noticed over the years these friends have just over time become less and less happy. And if you know somebody like that in your life, that it's hard to be around them sometimes because they're just always kind of doom and gloom. They're always upset about something. They're always feeling very negative and down. And you're excited to see them, but very quickly the conversation turns to, oh, woe is me, and things are miserable. And you wouldn't believe that they were Christians if they didn't tell you because of how miserable that they seem to be. Maybe you know somebody like that in your life. Hopefully that's not you. And sometimes we call those people negative Nancys. Sometimes we might say negative Nancys. And I've been there. We've all been there when we've had those days that we just felt down. And we just felt negative and we failed to be positive and to be rejoicing, to be thankful for all that we have. We all get in those ruts sometimes. Maybe some struggle with this more than others. But I want us to talk about negativity this evening and how we can overcome such. Because the Bible tells us in passages like what Brother Twitchell read for us earlier, I appreciated that very much. Philippians 4:4, to rejoice in the Lord always. And again, Paul says, and again I say, rejoice. As Christians, we should always, most of the time at least, be rejoicing, being positive, being thankful. The other passage you see there, Titus 2 and verse 10. In the latter part of that verse, Paul would say to adorn the doctrine of God, to adorn it, to dress it, if you will, to make it attractive, as it were. Not that it needs any help, not that the gospel has anything but a positive message to it, but we need to be careful that as we walk and live the Christian life, that we are always portraying a positive, a joyous message when it comes to what it means to be a Christian and to live that abundant life. You think about how much time we spend, men and ladies too. Sometimes ladies spend a little more time, and that's all right, doing some of the makeup and things like that that the guys don't tend to have to worry about. But we all, men included, we take time and we get ready and we adorn ourselves. And if you're like me, men, you shave constantly. Some don't shave as much, and that's okay, but they tidy their beard and they comb their hair, and you do things to make sure that you're well adorned, if you will. You're ready to go out into public and be seen. And some of us, no matter what we do, we just can't look good. You know, we just can't get to that good looking state. We try real hard, but we just can't do it. And some of us have that natural beauty, and some don't, but that's irrelevant. I'm picking a little bit, but here's the point. When it comes to the gospel of Jesus, how are we portraying it? How are we giving it as an image to those around us? When they look at us, do they see us as a happy, joyous, positive person? Not physically are we attractive, but is the gospel an attractive thing? Because we are full of joy and love and genuine in our faith, and is that something that they want to be a part of? Because if it's the opposite, chances are they're not going to be interested in what we have to say about the gospel. Let me give you some biblical examples, of some pessimists in the Bible. Some folks that were negative, at least in this stage of their life. And then we'll talk a little bit about how important this is, the effects of it, and then ultimately what we can do as Christians to overcome this and to be more positive. The first example I want to mention to you is that of Goliath. And we might label this first pessimistic thought, always believing the worst outcome will come to fruition. Always fearing the worst and believing that the worst thing will take place. For example, in the case of Goliath and the Philistines, as it was often the case and has been for centuries, sometimes kingdoms, different groups of soldiers that are fighting will try to avoid all the bloodshed, and instead they'll send out their best soldier, their top guy, and they'll offer that the other kingdom, the other soldiers offer up their best guy and they battle it out. And whoever wins, the kingdom that loses will be in servitude to that kingdom. That's kind of what the Philistines and the Israelites were doing here. The Philistines in particular, because they're saying, look, we've got this Goliath. We'll send out our best man, Goliath, who is over 9 feet tall, who has an incredibly heavy amount of armor on, a sword, a javelin, spear. The Bible says, all of you, as you picture this man, he is a warrior of warriors, a man of man, physically speaking. And so they tell the Israelites, you throw somebody out here to fight our best warrior, and if Goliath wins, then you'll serve us. But if you defeat Goliath, we'll serve you. No need for the rest of that bloodshed, right? And what was the Israelites' attitude? The people of God, what was their attitude? Well, there's no way we're going to fight this guy. There's no way we could win this. We're going to lose. That's going to be the outcome. We're nothing compared to this man. Well, here comes this little shepherd boy, David. Just a little young lad, and he's asking, he shows up, and you know, he's been keeping the sheep, and he shows up, and he's asking Saul and the people around, what's going on here? And they tell him. And David says, who is this guy that he thinks he can defy the armies of God? And they're very degrading to David, saying, shouldn't you be keeping sheep? What are you even doing here? We don't have a chance against this guy. But David stayed positive. You know, David could have said, I'm just a little young lad. I'm tiny compared to this Goliath. He could have said, you know, all I've got is this little slingshot. What chance do I have against a sword and a shield? But David understood that he had God on his side. And he stayed positive. He knew that he would have the victory, thanks to God. And he took down a giant, literal giant, in his life. But how many times will we not face our giants, if you will, because we're like the Israelites? We just fear the outcome is going to be the worst. Could you imagine a coach of a team showing up in the locker room and saying, guys, don't waste your time. We're going to lose anyways. Right? This team always wins. They're the best at what they do. We're not going to win. Just go out there and have fun. No big deal. We don't care if we win or not. Right? Coaches don't say that. Nobody wants a coach like that. We want coaches that are saying, we're going to beat them this year. Right? We're going to be able to win this game. We're going to beat this undefeated team. And you get the idea of a pessimist. We'll make some applications to this a little bit later. But let me give you a couple more examples. What about the spies of Israel that were spying out the land of Jericho? They're going to take the land, and ultimately it was Jericho. That's where they were going to begin. But ultimately Canaan's land, the promised land, they're viewing out the land, and they come back to give the report. And you remember when they get back and they tell I was going to say Joshua. I'm thinking back to the book of Joshua. They come back and they tell in Numbers here, they're, look, we just really feel like this land is beautiful. It's full of milk. It's full of honey. There's water. This is fantastic. But there are giants. There are these sons of Anak in the land. And we can't. We can't take this. We can't do this. Remember as the song goes, if you ever sing that song in VBS, right? The kiddos sing that 10 were bad and 10 were good. 10 were bad and 2 were good. See, I don't even know the song. I'm just terrible. I got up here unprepared. 10 were bad and 2 were good. Only 2 individuals said or spoke positively of this. Joshua and Caleb. The rest reported that there was no way they'd be able to do this. I remember growing up, anytime I would say I can't, and now that I'm older, it didn't bother me as much, but I hated hearing this. My grandfather would always say, can't, never could. Have you ever heard that phrase? If I said I can't, never could. I couldn't stand hearing that, but it's true. It's an attitude that if I just feel like I can't do something, then I won't be able to. And I do this sometimes. Man, I don't know if you're like me in this, but I have a bad habit of placing something somewhere or misplacing it. And it's like I'm on autopilot, and I'll put something like my wallet somewhere, and then when I go looking for it, I have no idea where it is. And I get frustrated sometimes, and I'm like, I can't find it. Somebody else must have moved it, right? Of course, in this case, there's only one other person in the house. She must have moved it, right? I can't find it. Got up and walked off if you didn't move it, because I know I put it right here. And then a few minutes later, it shows up somewhere. Oh, yeah, I forgot I did that, right? I can't find it. And we just want to give up. We need to be careful about that spiritually. The spies had that attitude. We can't take this land. These guys are too big. Very similar to the case of Goliath. What about another pessimistic mindset? One is always fearing the worst outcome. 2, can't, never could. 3, what about just simply being ungrateful, complaining? Complaining and griping. You know somebody that does a lot of that in your life? Always complaining, never looking at the bright side. In Numbers 11, you've got the Israelites again here. And now in this case, they are upset. They're upset because, well, there's this manna. And he's feeding us, God's feeding us this manna week after week after week. And they're tired of it. so tired of it that they go on to say, oh, that we were back in Egypt again. Oh, that we could get back to the garlic and the onions and the and this and that. And I'm tired. If I see one more piece of manna or coriander seed, I don't want any of this anymore. They're complaining. They're ungrateful. You know, it reminds me of the story of the new neighbor that came into town, into this neighborhood, and she and her husband moved in, and her neighbor that lived next door found out that they were new to the neighborhood and brought this Monday morning, brought to them a warm blueberry pie that she had baked for them. And the couple opened the door and were very excited. Thank you so much for this amazing blueberry pie. Well, it just so happened, because she was so thankful and so excited about that pie, this neighbor decided next Monday to do it again. And so she brought them another blueberry pie. Wow, thank you so very much. Well, the next week, she brought another blueberry pie. Thanks. And the next week, she didn't make it on Monday. Something came up, so she brought the blueberry pie on Tuesday. And when the couple opened the door, the lady there said, well, I was expecting you yesterday. What happened? She said, oh, but thank you, though. I appreciate that. Well, next week she brings the blueberry pie again. Well, this time they answer the door and, do you have any, could you make anything besides blueberry? Maybe cherry or apple or something else? Well, at this point, they're just not going to bring this pies anymore because they're not grateful. So the next time she doesn't bring the pie and she's caught out on the road, the neighbors are hollering, where's my pie? And you get the idea. Once we have something and we have it again and again and again, we tend to often take that for granted. Our gratitude kind of goes downhill and expectation kind of increases, doesn't it? And sometimes we don't realize how much we have until we lose it. You know, I read just a very interesting statistics. It's hard for me to believe, but I imagine it's probably true, that if you live in this country and all you have for an income is unemployment, that's all you have. Unemployment is all you make for income. You would be in the top 12% of the richest people in the world just by living in this country and having unemployment. That's amazing to me. And that's just being in this world, being in this country, not even Christianity. And yet you think about how much more blessed we are and the jobs that we have, maybe jobs that we're retired from that we had for many years, the income that we have, we probably make and do a little better than unemployment. And we're Christians, we're children of God on top of that, most importantly, in this country. And yet we sometimes are ungrateful, aren't we? And I say we, me too. You know, it's amazing. I just expect that air conditioner to come on when it gets hot outside. I expect the lights to come on when I flip that switch. I expect that microwave to start up when I push those buttons. I expect the car to crank when I turn the key. I have all these expectations, and I almost expect them instead of being reminded how blessed I am to have these things and to be grateful for those things. And with that mindset, I'm going to be a lot less likely to be a pessimist. Just to make this clear, let me also just mention quickly what we're not talking about. I don't want you by any means to think that you can never say anything negative or that you could never be sad. Of course, that's not the case. A good biblical example is 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 1. Paul says, you're reporting commonly that there is fornication among you, right? That this man is with his father's wife. And you're just puffed up about it, he says. You just act like nothing's going on, and everybody's, in fact, they're feeling pretty positive. Well, Paul says, you shouldn't feel so good about this. This is not something to be positive about. You need to be reporting this. You need to be speaking against it, because a little leaven leavens the whole lump, as he would explain to them. That sin is spreading throughout the congregation, and they're just being pat on the back, acting like nothing's going on, when that sin needs to be addressed. And that person needs to repent or to be withdrawn from. With such an one, he would say later in the chapter, with such an one, know not to eat, the way the King James Version words it. Sometimes there are legitimate issues. There are sins. There are things that happen that need to be addressed. And sometimes we have to talk about things we don't want to talk about. And those can be negative experiences. Of course, that's not anti-Christian by any means. We understand the difference. And you think about being sad. You know, sometimes I truly believe some folks really struggle and feel like being sad is unacceptable. And if you're sad all the time, then sure, something's wrong. But if you're never sad, I'd say there's something wrong too, if you're never sad. There are things that happen in life, right? We're sad over sin, for one, and our loved ones that maybe we're struggling with them because they're in sin and they won't let said sin go, or whatever it is. We all have those in our lives that we're upset about and we're sad about because we want them to be faithful Christians and they're not. Maybe it is that we lose someone that we love, right? Or something negative happens to us at work. Maybe we lose our job, or the list goes on and on. And these are things that it's hard to be excited about that. We can still be thankful. We have much to be thankful for, but it's okay to weep. It's okay to be sad. Even Jesus himself wept when Lazarus lost his life. He wept knowing he was going to be raised again, but he wept. John the Baptist, when he died, he went to a mountain alone, and what did he do? He prayed and he wept. Jeremiah, you think about Jeremiah, he's called the weeping prophet, right? He wept over the sin that was going on, the people of God. Certainly there are times that being sorrowful is absolutely acceptable. But I want us to understand, too, how serious this is. I think sometimes when it comes to matters of the heart, things that are, everything stems from the heart, but things that are not so much what you do, they're more so something that you think, and maybe something that you don't even realize is happening because it's just so easy and common. And sometimes we make those things out to be very minor. We don't really worry about them as much, such as jealousy, right? We might say to ourselves, jealousy really doesn't hurt anybody as long as I don't act on it, but I feel that jealousy inside, that envy. Maybe even I want someone else to be brought down, for them to fail at what they're doing because I'm jealous of them and wish I had what they had. We might not take that as seriously as, say, fornication, right, or adultery, right? We might not take that as seriously as murder or stealing, but it's still a sin. It's still contrary to God's word. Indifference, apathy, not caring, and, you know, a little white lie. We could talk about so many things that sometimes they get put in this category of not so bad. Don't worry about those. It's these big sins that we need to care about. This is a serious matter when we talk about negativity, being negative, being a pessimist. You think about Exodus 4. How did it make God feel when Moses was being a pessimist? God was telling Moses to go and to talk to Pharaoh and bring my people out of Egypt. And you remember the excuses? Who am I to do this? Who am I? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to tell them when they ask me these questions. And then he says, well, I'm not an eloquent man. Right? He says, they're not going to believe me, right? He mentions all these arguments. And finally, the fifth one is just, please send somebody else. And in verse 14, the Bible says, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. Stop being negative, Moses. Stop making excuses. Stop fearing the worst outcome is going to take place. Stop being ungrateful. Stop acting like you can't do this. It angered God. And finally, Moses went and ended up being the great deliverer that he was. Numbers 11 and verse 10, you think about what happened to the people that were complaining, right? Oh, they were just complaining, not a big deal. What did God do? Because of their ungratefulness, he killed those people. He didn't wipe out all of Israel, but those in the uttermost parts of the camp that were complaining, that were kind of the source of this anguish and griping and complaining, he took their life. He wiped them out. Tell me that's not serious. He killed them just like he did Nadab and Abihu for offering unauthorized worship to God, incense to God. And in 1 Corinthians 10, 10 and 11, we see Paul telling us these serve as an example for us so that we can follow the positives, right? Follow in those steps and avoid making the same mistakes, if you will, as they did. It was very serious. It was a big deal. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 3. Turn there with me, if you will. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Maybe a passage that we don't catch this particular part of it very often, so I want to read it together. At least I didn't until I was doing this study. Verse number 2 of 2 Timothy 3. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents. What's the next word? Ungrateful, unthankful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of God but denying its power. Avoid such people. This list of sins, these list of things going on that Christians have no business doing, one of which is being ungrateful. Ungrateful. Somebody that's complaining, that doesn't appreciate what God has done for them. That's a heart problem, isn't it? And it's serious. And he says, avoid such people. And we get it. We don't want to be around people like that, that are complaining all the time. But we need to examine ourselves. So we'll see more in a moment. We need to examine ourselves and make sure that one of those negative Nancys, if you will, is not us. What about the effects of this? Right? We talk about how serious it is and how God feels about it. How does it affect me and those around me? Number one, it's corruptive. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. If I'm negative all the time, then there's a reason they call him Negative Nancy. I'm saying that a lot, and I don't think we have any Nancys here tonight, but if you are a Nancy, I'm not talking about you. Negative Nancy is just kind of an alliteration to serve a purpose, but if you are negative all the time, then that's why you get that name, right? It's who you are. You're a negative person. It consumes you. You're down all the time. It's hard to appreciate anything, and you probably don't have a lot of friends because people don't want to be around you. It corrupts you. Corrupts you to the core, and it corrupts those around you. Not to mention, it's very counterproductive, isn't it? It's very counterproductive. You know, a study was done, and I thought it was interesting. And be turning to Psalm 51, if you will. Psalm 51, as I mentioned this. I found it interesting. There was a psychologist who did a study with an insurance company. And this was several years ago. And in this study, this insurance company hired people, two groups of people. They hired people who, number one, in group A, failed their aptitude test, but scored positive in their overall attitude. So these were optimists that failed their aptitude test. And they hired that group of people. And then in group B, they hired people who passed their aptitude test, but who scored as negative Nancys, if you will, for lack of a better way to put it, who scored negative in their attitude. They were not optimists at all. They were pessimists, right? And those individuals worked for 2 years for this company. Group A sold 21% more insurance in year one, and interestingly, 57% more insurance in year two than those who passed their aptitude test but were negative, right? And the reason it was, as they interviewed them later and put the stats together, they found that those who were pessimists, if they failed to sell, or once they did fail to sell insurance, they just felt like defeated, that nobody was going to accept this. And they put less into it, they were less motivated, they made up excuses, and they sold less insurance. But those on the optimists, right, they maybe failed to sell some, maybe they weren't quite as smarter as those on the other group, however you want to put it, but the fact is they were successful because they looked at it as, well, maybe I just need to improve and try again. Or maybe that I just caught them at a bad time. I'll go and just keep going. And so they sold more. Well, here's the point. We're not selling the gospel, right? We don't want to think of it that way. But when we present the gospel message and we set that example in our lives, it's going to be very counterproductive if I think I'm going to be successful and I'm a miserable person. I'm a negative person. I'm not going to bring souls to Christ. I'm going to be counterproductive. In fact, Psalm 51, 12 and 13, restore unto me the joy of your salvation and uphold with me a willing or upright spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your ways and sinners will return to you. David writing this, some say right after or soon after, and about the sin with Bathsheba and what took place, very penitent in heart. But he says, bring back the joy of that salvation. Bring it back. Help my attitude, my spirit to be upright again, to be clean, and I'll be ready to go out and to bring souls to you. I love that thought. Being optimistic can make the difference in bringing souls to Christ, of course. Being a positive person. What about being contagious? You know, in Numbers 14, after the spies came back and gave that negative report, 10 of them, in chapter 14 and verse 1, right after that, the Bible says that the people of Israel wept and cried that night in fear of these giants. It's contagious, isn't it? You know, I think about all the negative things that have been going on in our country. In my mind, there's a lot of negative stuff happening. And I've just been trying to avoid the politics and stay away from all of it. Not that I don't care and not that I'm not praying about it, but I just don't like hearing about it because it brings me down, hearing how divided we are and how much arguing and violence and all of these things going on. And I've gotten off social media, something that I've always enjoyed. Several months ago, nearly a year now, I guess I've been off of Facebook and that sort of thing. And if you're still doing that, nothing wrong with that. But for me, I just got so tired of seeing all the negative stuff all the time. And it just brings me down. It's contagious. I've been negative sometimes, and I imagine I've brought others down. It's a contagious thing that we need to be careful about. Nobody wants to be around those people because they feel down. They feel sad. Again, who's going to want to be a part of Christianity when you are a miserable person, bringing them down instead of lifting them up? And finally, negativity can cause a lot of confusion. Because what happens is, and you see this in Numbers 14 as well, what happens is the individuals begin to wonder, where is God in all this? If everything is so miserable and I'm just so down all the time and nothing can go right, is there really a God? Is He really out there taking care of me? It causes confusion. People begin to question God. Their faith begins to dwindle. Clearly, their faith isn't what it needs to be. And in leading others to feel the same, we may very well be pulling them away from God as well. Think about how this applies. We've already talked about evangelism, right? The difference in, let's say I go out and I teach someone the gospel and they deny it, they're not interested, they won't have anything to do with it. That could be very discouraging. And I could think to myself, well, this just doesn't work, times have changed, and just give up. Or I can think to myself, well, you know, I've planted a seed and maybe somebody will water that seed later. Or maybe I did catch them at a bad time and I'll try again some other time. And we keep going and keep teaching the gospel as we were told. Think about edification and fellowship, encouraging one another, right? Maybe, and I know you miss this, I certainly miss those fellowship meals, right? Those potlucks and those types of things, you get together and spend more time together and eat a good meal, but you know, maybe you're just like, well, the food's always cold when I get over there, or I think somebody's just bringing their leftovers, it doesn't seem fresh, and you know, these people, it's just the same old thing every time, and right? Instead of maybe thinking to yourself, it really doesn't matter about the food so much, right? Who might I be able to encourage today? Or somebody might encourage me. Maybe there's somebody in a situation and I can help them out today, right? It's fundamental, but we can easily get in that rut when things happen over and over again and we begin to speak negatively about something that can be a wonderful thing, benevolence. Maybe it is that we're negative about benevolence. Maybe we say, you know what, that person's just going to take that money and spend it on drugs. I'm not going to help them out. Now, I want to say this too. Now, we need to be careful, right? We need to be careful we're not enabling someone, just giving cash out to anybody and not helping them to use it wisely and teach them the gospel. Don't get me wrong. I know that's important. But maybe it is that we just don't feel positive about benevolence at all, that nobody's going to see the love of God in helping them financially. They're not going to come around. They're not going to change, right? Well, I'm thankful my God doesn't think that about me, that I can't come around and do better and improve. We ought to think positively about these benevolent works that are out there, the mission field that's out there and the good that's being done, people seeing the love of God. So much good can be done through benevolence. We could talk about programs, right? Every congregation kind of has their activities, their efforts, their missions that they do, that they support. And again, we can be negative about these things. They don't work, right? They came up with this idea that's never going to work. What are they thinking? It's funny. It's so hard. I shouldn't say it's funny. Really, it's sad, I guess. It's so hard to please everybody, right? It's just not going to happen. And when you get that many folks involved and their opinions, and sometimes we can really be divided over these types of things and bring others down instead of looking at it positively. As we conclude, though, how do we overcome this? All right, we've talked about some negative attitudes. We've seen biblical examples. We've looked at ways that this can affect us, how serious this is, how it can seep into the church, into our lives. But how do we overcome it? I've got 8 things I'll move through very quickly within the next 5 minutes, and I'll be quiet. Number one, I've got to admit the problem. Just like with any sin in my life, I've got to examine myself, 2 Corinthians 13:5. I've got to examine myself and ask that question. Am I being negative? Am I being a defeatist attitude? Am I always fearing the worst? Or am I being positive and optimistic? Am I being grateful for what I have and always thinking about the positive and not focusing on the negatives? Maybe it is that I need to admit that I have a problem. Number two, pray about it. Pray, of course, right? This is always the case. Pray about that. Help God to ask God to help us, I should say, to have wisdom, to be aware of this, and to do better, to be better, to change our thoughts, to fight, to overcome feeling so down, depressed, and negative all the time. It's amazing how prevalent this really is in the Lord's body. We all struggle with it, I suppose, from time to time. Psalm 103 and verse 2, he says there, never forget the benefits of God. The benefits. I love that word. Count your blessings, in other words. It's amazing. Somebody told me a long time ago, and I don't always remember to do it, but it's amazing when I am down, if I think to myself, count my blessings. Think about the positives for a moment. And if I do that and I start to name them off, boy, I realize quickly how blessed I am. I'm reminded of that. And it always helps me to take a breath and relax, right? And to be able to overcome that. Count your blessings. We sing the song, but do we do it? Do we do it enough? Accountability. Proverbs 17:17, iron sharpens iron. I always love that passage. Iron sharpens iron. We need each other. We need to grow. We need to bounce ideas and things off of each other. But you know what else we need with each other is accountability, right? A true friend, a true biblical friend, someone that's willing to tell me that I need to improve in this area. This is something that I'm messing up in that I can do better. A good friend will tell you that. A loving friend will say to you, listen, I love you, but you're really being negative. You're really complaining a lot, man. That's not you. What's going on? Right? And so accountability can help. Iron sharpens iron. Find somebody and ask them, hey, hold me accountable. Help me to get over this. And that's true of any sin, perhaps, that's in our life. Number five, don't compare yourself. Again, examine yourself. And there's a few other verses I thought about here, but really it's that same concept, right? Don't compare yourself to everybody else and how they're doing, what they have in their life. Because you'd be amazed, and you know this as well as I do in saying this, you'd be amazed. Folks that seem to be happy all the time, seem like they just have it all together, right? A lot of times it's just a face, isn't it? Because the fact is, when they go home, they're struggling too. They've got their battles. Maybe they just hide it a little bit better than you or somebody else. So don't compare. Don't compare yourself to somebody else or others. It's not going to help the situation. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't follow a good example, but don't let yourself be brought down wanting to be like someone else. In particular materialistic ways is the idea. Number six, swap those negative thoughts with positive thoughts. Again, this is fundamental, right? You know this. I know this. But in those moments, we forget sometimes, don't we? When I'm having those downtrodden moments, when I'm down and out, as it were, and I'm struggling to get through whatever it is that's ailing me, I just feel unhappy. I mean, sometimes you just can't put your finger on why. You just feel unhappy. Well, let's replace those negative feelings with positive ones, focusing on those positive things. Philippians 4 and verse 8, you think about all the things he mentions there, whatsoever things are true and are lovely, really verses 4 through 8, think on these things, those things that are going to bring about the optimism, the positive, the joy that we should have in our lives. Number 7, have faith in God. Trust in the Lord, right? Lean not on your own understanding. Proverbs 3, 5 through 6. He will direct your paths. We need to continue to trust that God's going to take care of it. Whatever it is in my life that's bringing me down, that's making me just kind of feel negative, feel like I just can't win today or this week, this month, this year, whatever it is. 2020 was one of those years, wasn't it? Man, if there was a time that you struggled with being negative, that I struggled, it was 2020. I'll tell you, that was a tough year. Proverbs 3, 5 to 6 is a good reminder. Remember that God's in control. He's going to take care of it. And I need to continue to have that strong faith that he'll do so. And last but not least, there's one thing I can always remember as a child of God, as a faithful Christian, is that when I leave this world, what I have to look forward to, there's no more negativity. There's no more of whatever's going on in my life that I'm struggling with or in this country or with my family, whatever it is, it's gonna all go away. And I'm going to be in a place where negativity doesn't even exist, right? The word's not even a word there, so to speak. And I love 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 9. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard, nor has entered into the heart or the imagination of man what God has in store for those who love him. That's an amazing thought, isn't it? We can't even imagine it. We can't even imagine it. And that's what we have to look forward to. If nothing else is going right in our lives, if we're a faithful Christian, we can think about that. It's going to be worth it all. Heaven will surely be worth it all. Our life is just a drop, and a dropper, if you will, of the ocean, of the water in the ocean, just a drop compared to the eternity that we're going to spend there if we're faithful to Him. Friends, this is a very, very fundamental study. It's a fundamental study. You know these things. I know these things. But if you're like me, sometimes we forget, especially when we're down. Maybe it is that we need to examine ourselves this evening and recognize that we've been struggling to be a positive person lately. We've been struggling to show others the joy of Christianity because we've just not been able to find that joy ourselves. I hope something that's been said tonight has been encouraging to you or could help you encourage someone else. If you've wandered away and need to come back tonight, whether it's negativity or some other sin that you're struggling with, we would love to assist you and encourage you and pray with you and for you. As I sometimes remind you, we're not here to look down upon you. You know each other and how wonderful these good people are in this congregation. They love you. They want to help you. They're not here to judge you, look down on you, etc. We all struggle. We would love to assist you. Maybe it is that you've never become a child of God. I don't know if that's the case for anyone here this evening that's at the age that they're ready to do that. But maybe it's time to do that. Maybe you've been studying and you're ready to become a child of God. Maybe you have questions about that. We would love to talk about them further. If we can do anything at all to help you tonight, whether it's overcoming negativity or anything else, why don't you come forward and let us know as we stand and sing together.